Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have I told you how much I hate our lead-in music limits?
A few times.
And now I can't hear out of one of my earphones things. That's okay. I'll battle through the adversity. How about Brian Batko? Huh?
Not a one-hit wonder.
He's great. He really is. And he goes out to his car and just sits in his car, not driving, so that he can deliver a better on-air product, which I would differentiate that, for example, from Cabali. Did you hear him on the Sunday preview show?
I heard parts. What did I potentially miss?
Him not being legible because it sounded like he was calling from a well, 1,000 feet underground. What is he doing?
He did sound like he was underwater. And I wonder when you go to a press box if you're just trying to find the quiet spot to not interfere with everyone, especially because you're trying to
do
that.
That's going the extra mile, my friend. That's going the extra mile, and Brian Batko does that. I love Cabali, of course I do. It's part of the charm that he would call from a well, right?
He joined us in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, he joins us in 20 minutes, yes. Does he? We can rip him then, all right? I'll rip him right off the top today. Not that that would be any different than any other day. Is this the first segment of the noon hour?
That's correct.
What is happening here? And then Cabali's at 12:40?
Yes.
All right, then let's get to the best of Ben and Tomlin. First, a shout out here to one of my daughter's old teammates in softball. And forgive me out there if I'm missing somebody from one of these sports, but I always said of all her teammates in all her sports that she grew up with, basically, softball, basketball, volleyball might be different, but she kind of just took that up. That one we were going to be watching on TV someday, one we would watch on TV someday, is Lily Duffel, Char Valley. You could see it when she was 12. An unbelievable power-hitting catcher. Just kills the ball. Do you watch a lot of softball, either college or have you covered high school games and stuff?
I've actually called some WPIL championship softball before.
I feel like I've seen a million to the point where I became very sick of it. But I've never seen anything like her in terms of a power hitter. Unfricking believable. She signed at Penn State.
Wow. It's a big commitment.
I think I will be watching her on TV, won't I? So congratulations to Lily Duffel and the Duffels. That's awesome. Great picture of her in a Penn State jersey. That is really cool. You know what I mean? When you know someone since they were little, and here they are.
Yeah,
all these years later.
Especially when they have that big of an opportunity and that big of a commitment to go to a college and play at a high level.
Yeah.
It's cool to see all the hard work pay off and that journey that you've ventured with somebody.
It really is. I'm very happy for her. All right, let's get to the best of Tomlin and Ben, shall we? You tell me what you got, and then we'll riff on it. I miss Ron, do you?
Would you like to start with Ben, or would you like to start with Tomlin?
You never answered my question.
Do I miss Ron?
Yeah.
Not as much as you miss Ron.
I really don't miss him. I was lying. Let's go.
Let's begin with Ben talking about Joe Flacco. And was Ben more worried when Flacco came in or not?
I told him the same thing. I said, Joe, when you came in the game, I just had a bad feeling. And he goes, can you believe it? Pittsburgh, like the one team that I played so many years. And having Joe Flacco in the game makes me more nervous than Anthony Richards in the game. Now, Joe's not going to beat you with his legs. He doesn't have to because they got Taylor who can run the ball. So you don't need two runners back there. But you have a guy that can sling the ball. Made me nervous. And sure enough, Joe did it.
I'll tell you this much about Flacco is that people greatly overreacted to what was honestly a historically horrific second half of that playoff game against Houston. But it's almost like he became some kind of laughingstock after that. Like, you know, Joe Flacco, you know, the epitome of the aging quarterback who can't do it anymore. Hold on a second here. Joe Flacco, when he went to Cleveland last year, saved their season, and he didn't do it by handing off. Would you like me to read off some of his games limits?
Yes.
Thank you, because I was going to do it anyway. First game back, 254 yards, two touchdowns. They lose to the Rams. Second game back, 311, three touchdowns. They beat the Jags. Third game, 374, two touchdowns. They beat the Bears. He had a couple picks in that game. But you know what? That's what you get, by the way. You want to throw the ball and score points. Sometimes you get intercepted. Does the good outweigh the bad? It did with Flacco. Houston, pretty good team last I checked. He went in there and beat them in the regular season. Went 27 of 42 for 368 and three touchdowns. How many people are doing that in the league these days? And then the Jets, 309 yards and three touchdowns. And then, by the way, he went into Houston and for the first half of that game went toe-to-toe with C.J. Stroud. That game was a shootout. And then he had a couple of horrific passes. He did. He had a couple of horrific passes returned for touchdowns. I think any team in the league would have been smart to bring in Joe Flacco this year. And it turns out that the Colts were pretty smart because, as Ben said, he can still stand back there and pick you apart. He can. Part of me thinks Ben could still do that, by the way, too. If you had the right protection for him, why couldn't he?
Behind this offensive line, I'm not sure. Well,
I didn't say that. But man, when you reach that age where you can dissect defenses and you still have the physical skill, still have the arm to get the ball there, that's kind of a dangerous combination. And obviously, Flacco has severe limitations. I wouldn't want him as a starter necessarily. However, I will say he's probably a better passer than probably at least a third of the guys in the league starting right now, at least. Probably more than half, now that I think about it. Next.
Let's go to the penalty component of this game. And Tomlin has been really critical of the officials over the last couple of weeks. Ben also chimed in. First, here's Tomlin on what the referees told him about Minkah Fitzpatrick's flag and also what New York said.
Like you mentioned, penalties being an issue for you. And some of your players made some comments about not liking the calls. What is your message to them, either in-game or in general, when there may be some frustration about the way you're being officiated?
You know, you're going to get wrong from time to time, just like the opponent's going to make a play from time to time. It's how we respond to it. We still had a lot of opportunity to win that game after that call in particular. I didn't like that call. I talked to New York yesterday. They didn't like that call as well, but it doesn't help me on a Monday. And so on Sundays, we better be mentally tough. And we better move on to the next snap and just understand at times that's a component of the game.
Thoughts?
Really, just feel like, one, we should maybe start to implement in the NFL a challenge for one call. You can challenge one penalty that you want, that you think you're going to be able to win.
Like anything in the rule book, I agree.
Anything in the rule book, and that should
Belichick
be a challenge.
Belichick said that for years. Open up the whole rule book, and people are like, well, that would take forever. No, it wouldn't, because you still have a limited number of challenges. I agree with you on that.
Just one. Maybe two. If you win your one, you get a second one.
I mean, these are game-changing plays when you're talking about time of the game and the yardage amount of the penalty. It's ridiculous, really. There should be somebody whose job it is, and maybe there is in New York, but I think even more specifically, to simply look at those kinds of hits, and especially hits on quarterbacks, and make a ruling immediately and get it down to the field. I mean, that was a joke. However, I completely disagree with Minkah when he says, you know, you can't play this game violently anymore. Ryan Clark used to say that, you know, it's basketball in cleats. Bull crap it is. Go turn on tape from the Chargers-Steelers game 2 weeks ago. That's as violent as any football game you'll ever see. And more violent than games in the 70s. Why? Because you have athletes who are way bigger, way faster, way stronger initiating and completing the collisions. That's why. It's very simple. So no, you can't clothesline people anymore. You can't crack people in the head. I get it. But the collisions are way more violent. Go back and watch that game. Go to YouTube and get your highlights. Go watch the Chargers hitting people before the Steelers mounted that drive, the beginning of their first touchdown drive Watch what who's number six for them. I can't think of his name, the safety. There's Derwin James, and then there's the other guy back there who absolutely kill people. And they did it to Jalen Warren and Connor Hayward on consecutive plays. Go ask Warren and Hayward if he can still play violent football. Go ask Minka. Did you see the hit he put on Richardson earlier in the game? Right on his spine? A great hit that forced a fumble. So don't give me this crap about how you can't play violent football anymore. And both things can be true, the call on him was ludicrous later in the game. Thank you, Limits. Next.
Here's Ben on the referees as well and his thoughts on how the game is officiated.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
On social media after the game, James Harrison.
Hold on. Pause. This is good. We need to do this every week. What should we call this segment? Mike and Ben? Ben and Mike? Mike and Tony's?
Well, Mike and Tony's is taken.
I know, but it just came to mind. What should we call this? We'll figure out a name. Go back, please.
Here's Ben.
I think on social media after the game, James Harrison, Debo. I won't necessarily criticize as bad, but I know he went in on the officials, how bad officiating was, because we can't get fined anymore. So, doesn't matter. I thought the Minka hit on the sideline was an atrocious call. Minka, you are exactly right. You play the game the right way. You care about player safety. You care about the rules, the integrity of the game. I thought that was a good hit. I thought he hit him with his shoulder. I don't think he launched. I think if anything, Minka kind of bounced off him. That changed the game because that's a huge play. It's a shame that they can't, that they don't get that fixed. Minka, good job playing the game. I'm sorry that happened to you.
I agree with every syllable and half syllable Ben just uttered there. He's just flat out right. Just stupid. What are you doing? But there was another call early in the game that, in my opinion, was 10 times more embarrassing, and that was landing on Fields with a great hit. I mean, shoulder to chest or shoulder to gut, and he put him on the ground. And then, you know, you have the same. Here's what really gets me. The same people who will cry about the Minka hit and lament the fact that you can't play football anymore are the ones defending the call against Land. Oh, he did land with all his body weight. That was a good call. No, it wasn't. We know what that looks like when it happens. It's essentially pile driving. It's taking a guy and unnecessarily using all your weight to drive him into the ground. This dude made a tackle. That's all he did. And if it was T.J. Watt or Highsmith or Cam or anybody else making that tackle, you would have been outraged at the call. It was way worse than the Minka call. Way worse. It was a tackle. That's all it was. Agreed?
Do you like Ball and Bites as a potential name?
Who?
Football and Bites, sound bites?
No. What?
No.
Ball and Bites?
Yeah. Football, baseball, basketball, and Bites? No?
No. No, the segment is Ben and Mike Tomlin were going back and forth between their sound bites.
I was just throwing out a hypothetical. But back to what Ben said. Yeah, I mean, I agree with him. It was so many with every syllable that he said.
Or half syllable, right?
As well. Because
next. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead. Give your soliloquy.
Basically, what Minka was trying to do and leaning with the shoulder, I just don't understand why the officials can't have somebody, because there's an official in the booth.
Yes.
That helps them signal. Why yes. can't you just drop somebody down and give a
somebody
quick answer before you make the call?
Somebody up there is watching quarterback hits because the league is so vigilant about them, and because it's a pretty important topic, because they're your bread and butter in many ways, your quarterbacks. And also these ejectable hits or non-hits that you see in other games. That's one person's job. Is to just look at that. He's the hit doctor. That's it. That's all he does. And he looks at that ridiculous play and immediately dials down to the ref on the field and says, pick up the flag and tell everybody no foul on the play. They do that anyways. And it drives me crazy in other instances. They did it in the Steelers' favor the other day,
yeah.
A holding call. And then this guy gets on the mic and says, oh, there was no holding. Really? Then why did one of the guys on your crew look at a play and call holding. Well, what do you mean there was no holding? Somebody watched a play, saw holding, and threw a flag. So there was holding. Why are you picking up the flag? But point being, you can pick up a flag for anything.
Right. It happens in games all around the league. I mean, I saw it a couple times in that Baltimore game against Buffalo. Last one. Here's Tomlin with the running game being better with Cordarrelle Patterson.
Darrell had success before he got hurt running the ball. Was there something that he was doing differently or that was working in the run game when he got in there?
He was playing extremely well, but we're not surprised by that. You know, he's a dynamic guy. We're excited about continually including him in what we do.
Yeah, a good question by Brooke Pryor. I think another question could have been and still could be for Tomlin, does Najee Harris's running style fit in your offense? Or as it pertained to the other day, maybe, Mike, it looked like at the same point in the game, in same situations, Cordarrelle was getting the ball on the same play calls as Najee, and one guy, 84, was hitting the hole fast and was unstoppable, and the other guy was very, very stoppable. He was averaging 1 yard a carry. How do you explain that?
You think Najee's hesitating when he gets to the line and is trying to, not Le'Veon Bell style of running, but he's just not going straight as soon as he sees it, he hits it.
Well, it's been a problem in the past, and I think it's correctable. I don't think he has the quickest first step in the league, don't get me wrong, but that's been a problem. You mentioned Le'Veon Bell. Somebody put out on X the other day the best of Le'Veon. I forget how he was great. And he was unique. I've never seen a guy, and I am a running back connoisseur from the 70s. I love analyzing their styles and watching how different they all are. Somebody did a comparison of Eric Dickerson and Derrick Henry the other day, and they're nothing like Tony Dorsett or Barry Sanders. Le'Veon was a unique player in the history of the game. The closest I saw to him actually was Franco in terms of exhibiting that kind of patience when 11 guys are trying to maim you. It's unbelievable how he would stand back there and hesitate and pick his hole and accelerate through it. He was great. Le'Veon Bell, at his very best, is one of the best running backs I've ever seen. You add to that that he could catch like a wide receiver, and it's actually sickening that his career went the way it did. And a lot of it is his fault. It is. But it's sickening because he should be going to the Hall of Fame. That's how good he was.
He probably needed another year or two in his peak to be able to accomplish that because he was right there. Right there in that 7-year window that you need to be a Hall of Famer. That's typically what the voting committee looks at. And the holdout obviously is going to hurt him for a while. He would just stop behind the line. That's what was crazy. He would be going 2 miles an hour behind the line of scrimmage. Just stop, wait, hit the hole.
He was a 2-time first team All-Pro. Like, you look across this legendary franchise's history, there's a limited number of guys who were 2-time first-team All-Pros, and he easily could have been. A year that he got 1,268 yards and 7 touchdowns, he easily could have done it that year, too. It's just, it's a shame. How old was he when that happened? And again, I didn't blame him at the time for looking for more money, but it's just, it seemed like he let himself go as well. It wasn't the same guy when he came back. He was 25, coming off a 1,300-yard season with 9 touchdowns and a first-team All-Pro who carried his team in the playoffs. And then that just wrecked his career. Do you know how many multiple-time All-Pros there have been in Steelers history, Wonder Twin? No, you don't.
No, 5?
Neither did I. No, there's more than that, but when you look at first-team All-Pro, you're looking at guys, here's guys who just had 2, like Le'Veon did. Just 2. Franco had 1. Marquise Pouncey had 2. DeCastro, 2. Mel Blount was only a first-team All-Pro twice. James Harrison, I mean, Ben was never a first-team All-Pro. Now, part of this is a function of who's in the league at the same time as you are. And then there's, you know, the top of the list, you have guys with as many as 4. And only 4 Steelers had six first-team All-Pro nominations. Four of them had as many as six. Can you tell me who they were, Wonder Twin?
Four of them had as many as six?
Yes.
Or say Joe Green?
And none more than six. Joe Green is wrong. He had four.
Jack Lambert?
Yes, he had six.
Mel Blunt?
I just said he had two. You weren't listening.
Troy Polamalu?
No, he had four.
Rod Woodson?
No, he had five. Jack Ham, Dermoni Dawson, and Alan Faneca. How about that?
Wow,
I wouldn't have
guessed Faneca.
How about that little horsefly?
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.